and welcome to Cruisin' for a Reviewsin', the podcast where I get a friend to watch a Tom Cruise movie they've never seen before and then review it with me. I'm your host, Cara Westworth, and today I'm joined by the very lovely Phoebe.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for coming along and helping me out with a movie that no one wanted to do for some reason. A lot of people haven't seen it and didn't want to do it. But yeah, it was one I've been really looking forward to doing because it's one of his newer ones.
It's one of his movies I feel like nobody would wanted to do because probably they didn't know that it existed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I had no idea it existed until I was looking up movies to watch and found the DVD. And yeah, I think because it's one of the few exceptions to the rules, to the rule where he is just doing mostly action movies now. Mm-hmm. And it's not an action movie. It's a drama.
Yeah, like a crime procedural
crimey
or something.
Drama with a bit of comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's very different to what he has sort of become known for in his later years. One of those ones that flew under the radar for a lot of us. I wonder if maybe Americans were really into it.
Yeah, it feels like an interesting story, like that specific era, like the 2017, 2018. Like this would have come out just before The Mummy that he did.
Yep.
Just before or just after? Like
I think it came out the start of the year and The Mummy came out later in the year.
Yeah, I reckon The Mummy would have just like overshadowed American Made and just got like lost in the waters along the way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was so surprised. I like when you sent me the list of like movies we could choose, I looked at this one. I was like, oh man, this sounds like so up my alley. This looks stupid as fuck. Like I can't wait to watch this. And yeah, it's very interesting and I can't wait to unfurl, pull that thread with you.
Excellent. So because we haven't mentioned it yet, we're doing American Made, which was, 2017, directed by Doug Liman, who has also worked with Tom Cruise when he did Edge of Tomorrow, which is absolutely one of my favorite Tom Cruise movies of all times.
Oh my God, yes.
Love it so much. I think about it all the time and there's a sequel and
I've watched it so many times. And you know what? I heard that he actually learned how to use one of those mech suits.
Yeah, of course he did.
He's his own stuntman.
He's
bad
like,
joke, I'm sorry.
A new thing I can learn? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, he actually built one himself.
So American Made. It is, in a nutshell, it is a movie following the life of Barry Seal, who he would say he was a drug smuggler on one level, but he was also helping the CIA, who were trying to gather intel on Southern and Central America. This was during the 80s, I guess, late 70s
into early 80s.
To mid-80s, yeah. Yep. He's a real guy, Barry Seal. If you are aware of like Pablo Escobar and all that kind of thing, they were the cartels from that era. He worked really closely with them, smuggling drugs for them while also gathering intel for the CIA. This movie is very loosely based on Barry Seal. First of all, Barry Seal was this really big, large, jolly fellow. Mm-hmm. Apparently really nice, whereas, Tom Cruise couldn't be further removed from Tom Cruise. But they say, like, we Hollywoodized it, but we chose Tom Cruise because had to be someone who's larger than life, which is what Barry Seal was. Yeah. But if you're going to get made into your life made into a movie, I want the hottest actor possible to be me.
If they try to find an actress that looks like me for my, untold Hollywood story, I will be turning over in my grave. Like, I want, I don't know, fuck, who instead of Jennifer Coolidge, who else can we get for it?
You're like, where the fuck is Charlize Theron?
Yeah, exactly. Charlize. 30 years my senior, but still looks 30 years my junior. God damn it.
Yeah, so that's the dream, is when they do a movie about your life, like the handsomest, hottest person possible plays you. Your life existed, and especially if you're a big like personality and someone who's famous like Barry Seal, we can go look at documentaries and stuff about him and see what he was really like. But the Hollywood version, should be fun.
Oh, love it.
So we'll go through who's in it. It's like a lot of people in it, but the central cast isn't hectic.
No.
So Tom Cruise obviously plays Barry Seal. We have Domhnall Gleeson, who plays Monty Schaefer, and we say Schaefer in inverted commas, which will come to light later on. Sarah Wright plays Barry's wife, Lucy. Jesse Plemons is Sheriff Downing. Caleb Landry-Jones plays JB, who is the brother-in-law to Barry Seal. And there's a lot of Colombian actors and everything who portray people from the cartels, but we don't spend a lot of time with them, I guess. It's mostly just with Barry.
You don't spend a lot of time with anyone in this movie, except for
Barry and a little bit of Schaefer.
Yeah.
Yeah, even Lucy, not a lot. Because like the kids you barely see.
Yeah, totally. There's like a lot of like kind of tertiary characters in this movie that you don't get to see their inner lives at all. It's just circulating Barry. It's all about Barry.
He's like the sun and all the little planets in the distance. circling around him. Okay, so the movie opens in 1978. We see some newsreels about the state of the US at the time and President Jimmy Carter talking about how first time in American history where people have thought that the next 5 years will be worse than the last 5 years, which I guess is probably when everything in America went downhill from the 70s. Like everything was so good in the 50s and 60s for them. Like everything was looking better and better. And
yeah. It's one of those movies that has, I think, one of my like most / least favorite Hollywood tropes where they like start with the Universal logo and then they do a record scratch and some 70s music starts playing. And then it goes to the 70s Universal logo. It's like, hey, we're not a regular movie. We're like a fucking cool movie, man. Record scratch.
Like. I think Universal were trying real hard to be something they weren't. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. they also have been a bit try hard, but like, because later in the year, The Mummy came out and they started to do their spooky dark universe.
God bless.
That everyone's like, laughs about it. Peace. I'm like, fucking wish that guy had. There were so many good things. I was so excited, except for like fucking Johnny Depp being in one of them. So excited about that dark universe.
Yeah. It would have been like a bunch of really good movie world roller coasters, you know?
And also, like, why try and create an extended universe before you've even started the movie? Like, just
see how the first one goes, man. Test the waters, man.
Idiots.
Yeah, I know. Like, if it didn't work for, like, the most popular movie in the world, The Mummy, like, starring Brendan Fraser in, like, the late 90s, if they could not make that a jumping off point and, like, every single child on planet Earth had watched that movie and loved it, like, why do they think that it could have happened?
Yeah.
With, like, Big Russ playing,
What is it? I was like so excited to see Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with him. Like,
I would have lost my mind. Like, it would have been so good.
Now trying something like making it dark universe, like how edgy we are. And like, all right, if you watch the old Universal Monsters movies, because there's nothing dark or edgy about them.
Yeah.
Like, I love them, but they're the dorkiest things in the world.
Totally. Yeah. And again, like that specific reboot, and to bring it back to this movie, like one of the things that I noticed was the Dark Universe reboot felt like a gritty reboot that should have happened 10 years prior.
Yeah.
In the same way that this movie has that sort of like, whoa, man, we're not a regular movie. We're a cool movie. We've got like a real gonzo journalism approach to like our editing and like quick cuts and kind of like exposition dumps and stuff, which like I said before, I'm like, man, this movie would have been awesome in 2005.
Yeah.
Like, it really doesn't feel like a 2017 movie.
No, you're right. Absolutely.
Not to say that I hated it, but it was just mood-wise very odd. Like, it felt kind of out of place for the time that it came out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And would have worked. Like, people have always been obsessed with Escobar and all the cartel, Mandala, whatever it's called, whatever the name is, the cartels and everything. It wasn't a certain time that it had to be made.
Totally.
But yeah, there you go. There's,
did it come out the same time as, did you say, Narcos?
No, I think it must have come out before. I didn't actually check the time frame of that because I watched this within the same year that I'd watched the first season of Narcos.
Yeah.
And which is why, like, if I hadn't watched Narcos, I would have been like, this movie's whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But because I'd watched that and I was hyper aware of the history of Pablo Escobar and the cartels in Colombia and everything, that this was like an extra little bit of information about the American side that they didn't really cover as much. So, yeah, that sort of brought it all together for me. But, yeah, it didn't need to be made around then. It could have been made, earlier.
It's
but
so interesting.
If you... If you listen to my last episodes about Last Samurai where I try to do lots of research, I started to do it for this and there's just so much. Like, they talk about the Iran-Contra affair and all that stuff and I'm like, what the fuck? And I'm looking at it and I'm like, oh, there's too much. There's like...
You don't need to be doing as much exposition dump as the movie does because they've got that shit covered well and truly. They're like, all right, we've got like 30 years worth of newsreels. We're going to cut up like as quickly as possible and have Tom Cruise kind of try to briefly narrate like 30 years of CIA.
It's like the problem when they do like, films about modern history. There's like so much, whereas, about the samurais or about medieval times, there's not much written history. So you can play around with it. And then when I read about in Wikipedia, I don't have to read 5,000 fucking tabs because I'm like, what the hell is that? What is that? Anyway, a lot happens in this movie that we're not going to go super into detail because if you want to look it up, please
be
do.
My guest. Listen to True and On.
Or watch this. Watch the movie, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, so Barry is a pilot. He clearly is quite bored with being a pilot, like just for like a...
Like commercial airline.
Yeah, commercial airline, yeah. And like, at one point you see him, he's a bit bored and he fakes turbulence because everyone's sleeping and he like that sort of stuff. On the side, he is smuggling cigars from Cuba and I guess he's not doing a very good job because someone from the CIA, who is Monty Schaefer, he meets him at a bar and sort of says, we know you're doing this and we like your style. Can you sneak around taking photos of people in Central America so that we have some intelligence on them? And I think they're taking photos of like,
was it like communist?
Oh yeah, it was basically the whole like, red panic that they were having in the 80s and 70s and 80s. So they're worried about all the communists were trying to take power in certain countries, and they would just wanted him to fly over really low, take photos and see what they were doing. And he was doing that, doing a really good job. And like he got upped for into more tasks, I guess, where he was going to Panama, and the colonel there was like trading state secrets to America for cash. So he would give them, take the cash, take the secrets.
Yeah. Noriega.
Yeah.
General Noriega was selling secrets in order to get money, while he was also being hired by the CIA to take photos of training camps and stuff. Like they were just making him do so many random jobs.
And like so illegal, like, but because of the CIA who was letting him, like.
Yeah. He literally walks up to him in a bar and he goes, "Hey, Barry, I like the way you do crime. Would you like to do crime for the CIA instead?" I don't have any business cards and you're not allowed to lodge any invoices, but I will give you a bag full of money.
Yeah. So they set up a shell company for him, like what they call the IAC, which is like the Independent Aviation Consultants, which is just a play on CIA.
Incredible.
Which I don't know. I didn't actually see if that was true, but that seems like something lazy that they do. They're like, just the IAC, that's good enough.
The creativity. It's endless. Yeah.
So when he first tells his wife about it, she's like, "What the fuck do you know about business?" Like he's obviously a smart man to be able to fly planes and helicopters and stuff, but he's obviously got no business sense or anything. So she's like, "What the fuck?" So he pretends to fly for the airline for a while and then eventually just quits because he's like, "Nah, I'm having too much fun being a crime guy."
This all happens within the first like 4 minutes of the movie as well. Yeah. Where he's like, starts out as an airline pilot. May I just say as well, at no point do the writers or director of this movie go, "We want you to like this person." Do you know what I mean? They're like, "Oh yeah, like he's some dickhead who is a pilot, who kind of like acts like a larrikin." And like you said, like he fakes turbulence. So he's like on a long haul flight. He's kind of bored shitless while he's flying the plane. And then in order to kind of like spice up his like, you know, day-to-day life, he just like puts the plane in a nosedive temporarily to like wake up people, and like suitcases fall on them. And I think the idea is that you're supposed to go, this fucking guy, he gets it. He hates the 9 to 5, you know, can't stand it. He's actually destined for greater things. And, you know, like on the side, like smuggling cigars and shit. And then Dom Hall Gleason, the CIA guy, comes up to him and he's like, gives him no context, like absolutely no proof that he's from the CIA. Like clearly this character, Barry Seal, is like desperate for an exit no matter what. So much so that he asks no questions. He's like, "Oh, you say you're from the CIA. Fantastic. Where the fuck do I sign up?" Like,
well, I think he basically kind of forces him a little bit, but also makes it sound so appealing because he says, "We've bought this plane for you. It's all set up and it's your plane." And he's like, "Fuck yeah, my own plane."
You're right. He does kind of like threaten, if you don't want to be my patsy or like do my bidding, then we might send you to prison. Wink, wink.
And then there's also like, "And how's Lucy?" Like he mentions the wife and everything. So he's like, "Don't you have another kid on the way?" And he's like, but I don't think Barry for a moment goes, "Oh, this is dodgy." He's like, "Hell yeah."
Yeah.
I can, yeah. But I think he is a little bit forced into it, but also just fucking goes for it too.
It is like a really interesting lesson in that sort of like friendly threat. Like Dom Hall Gleason's character, the entire time they're having this conversation, and sorry, we can totally
move on. No, it's fine.
But this initial kind of meeting between those two guys where like Dom Hall Gleason's character is so threatening without ever being rude or upfront. He's just kind of like wide-eyed smiling, this sort of like just friendly kind of like marketing guy appearance.
Mm.
But yeah, like on like this kind of like dark undercurrent kind of running through that maintains through the whole movie as well.
And he does things like that a bit later on where Barry's like, "Thank you for saying I'm doing a really good job, but like you understand I have two kids, another on the way, like, and I'm not making enough money to sort of support my family, and I'm doing a lot for you." And he's like, "I need more money." He's like, "Okay, well you'll work something out." And like being like, "Do crime, like whatever."
Yeah, that's true.
Like it was kind of giving me permission to like, okay, well, if you find some way to make more money while you're doing all this, fine, we don't care.
Yeah.
As long as we get what we want, which is fucking wild.
It's amazing.
Like the fact, like at a base level, all of this did happen. Fucking blows my mind. Like the 80s were a time. Like,
oh yeah.
It was no rules. Fuck me.
Yeah, Wild West.
So there's a cartoon where they actually explain the Cold War. They explain what the situation is really briefly. Mm. They talk about how during the Cold War, the Soviets were helping communist insurgents in Central America. The CIA wanted pictures of these insurgents, and countries like Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, Panama, Panama, Colombia, etc. Yeah, there was the whole Cold War panic where they didn't want these other countries to become communists. I'm like, fuck off, America. Who cares? Like, I just hated Russia that much, I guess. I don't know anything about this chapter of history, so people are probably like, what the fuck are you talking about?
We need a disclaimer at the beginning of this episode that is like, I am very stupid.
The whole 80s Cold War thing, I actually do not understand. Like, I would love to, I need a really good documentary that will sit, like, dumb it down for me and explain it all. But I love watching Cold War movies as well. Like,
it's dense. And also, like, when it comes to this specific part of that, like, era as well, like, there was this great tweet that was doing the rounds recently that was like, if you name three things that the CIA has actively admitted to doing, then you sound like a complete insane person.
A conspiracy theorist. Yeah,
you sound like a conspiracy theorist. Yeah, giving weapons to the Taliban and like all this kind of shit in order to kind of stir up trouble in like different countries and that kind of thing. Like, yeah, it is an incredibly dense part of history that this movie very clumsily tries to like tell the story, but also make it seem like an American win.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Where they're like, listen, they're doing all of these extremely horrible things and ruining people's lives, kind of just letting people die or outright murdering people, but it's set to some great rock music.
Like, yeah, this gloss over like all of the horrible stuff. Like, they briefly talk about what Pablo Escobar did and how he became a terrorist because he didn't like the way his country wasn't letting him do whatever he wanted. And then it's kind of like, he's started a war with the government. And they're just like, that's it. And like, meanwhile, he blew up a passenger plane. So he killed one person and killed like 200 people in the process.
Like, this movie kind of dines out on a lot of assumed knowledge. Let's put it that way. So it does a lot of like kind of little tidbits like that cartoon you mentioned.
Yeah.
Where it's like, all right, here's like a very brief introduction to the Cold War and America's role in it. And then it also goes, all right, we're going to assume you know everything about the drug cartel in Colombia.
Yeah.
And we're just going to move on from that.
Is
that
all right? I wonder if this movie was marketed just to Americans kind of thing, because Americans probably do have more knowledge about that sort of stuff. But then why would the average American know? I don't know. It's one of those things. Like, as Australians, for some reason, don't know that much about it. My mum's probably like, I know heaps about it. What the fuck are you talking about? But me as a...
There's people listening to this right now, like pulling their fucking hair out, just like, you dumb bitches. What are you talking about?
Fucking read a book.
Listen, let's get back to the cruise side of things. It's the only thing we can really listen.
I keep branching off into fucking history. No, I don't know.
We've got like the authority on the subject right here.
So, like, yeah, they show like a montage of him flying over all these different countries and talking about flying over countries, almost getting shot down by some of them. Like, at one point, the engine nearly blows up. Random montage of fucking, like, talking about his wife. And I'm like, okay, well, this is.
Listen.
As soon as there's sex in movies, I'm like, disgusting. I don't want to know about it.
Oh, my God. Like, covering your partner's eyes. I'm like, no, don't look.
It's Timothy Cruzel, stop that.
I actually hate Tom Cruise in sex scenes as well.
To me, yeah, I don't think of him as being a. No, sexy person.
He doesn't have a big sexual energy.
Yeah.
I don't feel
like I want him to be like my cool best friend who teaches me how to stunt drive a car kind of thing. And I will hug him also because I'm like, you made so many good movies. Thank you. But otherwise, sex scenes in general made me feel a bit sick. But yeah, Tom Cruise, I'm like, no, I don't want to know about this.
I know.
Dad, stop it. Especially because he's like a dad age and is a dad.
Oh, yeah, he's 21 years older than his girlfriend in this movie.
And they didn't even, like, and when I say they didn't choose Tom Cruise to look like, at least they had brown hair. Like, at least there was you know, if you wrote down some of the shared features, you'd be like, okay, fine. But, like, she and the actual person that she's playing, so different. Like, this completely different woman with dark brown hair. Like, anyway, it's
nobody wants to see regular people in the movies.
Apparently.
Never. Yeah.
he's been pretending to work for TWA, decides to just give it up, like, just. Well, they're checking all the equipment. He's just like, ah, fuck it, and just leaves.
Fails.
Which is everyone's dream. As well, it's like, I feel this movie appeals to American, like American men especially, where it's just like, did you just want to fucking go table flip and leave? And like, he gets to do it and just kind of do things his own way and like everyone can get fucked. We go to Colombia in 1980. So this is where he starts getting involved with the cartel sort of stuff. Like, he's trying to fill up his fuel for his airplane and it's locked and he gets basically hustled into a car and taken away he's like kind of has no choice because they come out and they've got guns in their belts. And then he's like, okay. He's actually meeting the Medean. I can't. Yeah, the double L's is like, yeah. Also going to butcher this. I butchered Japanese last time. I'm going to fucking butcher
around the world, baby.
Spanish this time. I had to write because so one of the leaders of the cartel is, his name is written like George, but it's actually Jorge.
Yeah.
And so I had to write it down because I'm like, you're going to say George like a fucking asshole. That's not how it's pronounced. So yeah, he meets Jorge, Carlos, and Pablo Escobar. So they famously the leaders of the Medellin cartel. And they basically give him an offer that's too good to say no to, which is they need him and his plane to smuggle cocaine back to the US. And they're like, we'll pay you $2,000 per kilo. And that is a lot of money. Like in early 80s money, like $2,000 a kilo, like
it's a fuckload.
They seem to think they can smuggle heaps and heaps of cocaine, but he can only take so much in his plane because also they've got the added wonderful, hilarious time of they've got this tiny short runway on top of a mountain and everyone who's tried to have got has just crashed the plane
this
immediately.
This is my favorite part of the entire movie. This whole sequence where, because it's one of the only times in the movie it actually stays still for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
The whole movie moves so quickly. And they're bouncing around and they're like, all right, now it's 1984. Now we're current times where he's filming and narrating himself and chatting about his history and all that kind of stuff. But like in this one sequence, so he's landed in Colombia and, you know, he's just finished a mission for the CIA where he's taken a bunch of photos and he's done his bribes and all that kind of stuff. He gets pulled aside by the cartel, like on the side of the road while he's trying to like fill up gas for his plane. And then they basically kidnap him and they do the exact same thing that Domhnall Gleeson did.
Yeah.
Which is, we love the way that you do crime for the CIA.
Yeah.
Would you like to do it for us as well? But, you know, in that very kind of like fiercely friendly way where they're like, look, we would love for us to do this friendly, or, you know, if you don't want to be doing this, then we'll just kill you basically.
Yeah.
There's no threat of prison. This is just, oh yeah, we'll like throw you off a cliff or whatever. And so he knows that he can't say no. He knows that he's probably got free rein to do crime with other, you know, for other businesses, not just the CIA. So he says yes. And he's got this this incredible sequence where, like you say, they're trying to offload, you know, 150 kilos of cocaine and get him to take it up to the States. But they're like got this camp on top of a mountain and the runway is like only a couple of hundred meters or whatever. And so there's all of these crashed planes like everywhere. And they're like, yeah, don't worry, man. Just like fucking, you know, take off and you'll be fine. And he's looking around at all of these crash planes and he's like, okay. Like there's an actual sense of danger in that scene. And it was like this kind of being assaulted from all directions kind of thing. And I thought it was like a really good kind of tableau. And, you know, he does make it like just by the, you know, skin of his teeth. And he like takes off and they kind of have like the story of how he drops, you know, ends up dropping cocaine off.
Oh, yeah, because they would like stuff. Just when you land, just take it in. He's like, no, I'm going to get caught. I'm going to fly over the flats in Louisiana, which is where he's from, and drop it off. And you just have people there collecting it. And if I don't land with it, then fine. Because then he just cleans it and then he lands and they check and he's like, all sweet.
Yeah, he invented, you know, the movie's basically saying, oh, like Barry Seal invented airdropping drugs.
Yeah.
Before then, like everyone was so stupid and all they did was try to like land the plane and they just had it in a suitcase. So they were stupid. But like until Barry came along and he like invented dropping drugs from an airplane and like, oh man, weren't they so lucky to have him?
Yeah. He doesn't question this. Like, I guess, do you question this? Like, are you like, these guys are obviously a big deal and do I get to have a say no? Like, he probably is a kind of happy-go-lucky person. He's like, all right, this is a lot I've been given. I'm just going to enjoy it while it lasts kind of thing. Yeah. Like, he doesn't think about it too much. Whereas I'd be like, this is fucked. I'm going into hiding. This is...
Well, because at this point, it's like his character has been, oh, like he might be a patsy for the CIA, but he's still in control of his situation.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, once the cartel kind of come into the fray, it's like, no, you're just like a patsy for everyone. Like it's not just the CIA. Like you are like literally so dumb.
Oh, one of the ways he avoids radar is by he flies really low. And so when he sort of pops up on the radar, they go, oh, no, that's near an oil rig and they have helicopters. So cool. Like, I guess the 80s were a time before technology really started just going up and up and up. And in like with home electronics and everything, but also like that sort of.
Just tracking.
Yeah, just track that.
General tracking.
And
right?
there was so much like, you know, things you can't even imagine doing. That's why there were serial killers and shit in the
80s.
Because there's no mobile phones.
Yeah, if you wanted to kill someone, you just like open their window, which was unlocked. Nobody locked their had doors. Nobody locked their windows.
As long as you disguise yourself, you fucking get away with it for the rest of your life if you weren't too stupid about it.
If you want to run away from the police, you shave your head and you drive one suburb over. Yeah. And they're like, it's like in GTA when like the like the map is flashing red and all you need to do is like hide behind like a post box for like 5 seconds. And they're like, we tried everything and we can't find him. He's just gone. Yeah, he's turned into a puff of smoke.
Like, should we talk to the cops over there? Nah, just move on from that.
Which actually literally fucking happens in this movie too. What's the 80s? He crashes the plane.
What's what the 80s are like? So if you've like, I don't know if you're a true crime person, but like with the Golden State Killer, the reason why they never had anything on him for so long is because he was smart enough, because he was a cop briefly. Mm. He knew that all the different departments do not talk to each other. So he just has to move to a different area, commit the crimes, and they're never going to tell each other. So they're like, that's the thing. Like, you could get away with crime so easily in the 80s. It's fucking, it's so embarrassing. Like, I wonder if they all look back and go, holy shit, we were so bad.
Oh my God.
So yeah, he avoids detection. He has all these sneaky ways. So even though he seems like to be a dumb man, he does some very smart things sometimes. You see him catching up with the cartel a few times. Pablo Escobar is kind of like, we want you to fly straight away. And like, they're obviously, this is a wild thing about this. So I don't know if you've heard like the tales from like Pablo Escobar where he would lose millions a day from rats eating the money because it was just the way he stored it. They would spend $2,000 a week on rubber bands for the money.
I don't know anything. I am so clueless when it comes to this specific part. Like, they were so
keen to like keep getting the coke over and get the money, but they literally couldn't spend it. Like, so Pablo Escobar had, I think he only had a couple of shell companies they would launder money through, but they just literally couldn't catch up. And then so they would just, as they do in this movie, just hide it, bury it in the backyard, things like that. And I'm like, why do you need to keep making this money? Why don't you stop? Like, it's obviously not about the money.
Yeah.
It's about like the power and the and then the thrill of doing
deception as well, right? Like, if you stop earning, then you're losing.
Just do it for fun then. If you don't need the money,
just do some drugs, you know? Just give it a crack.
And so he's in Colombia with the cartel leaders. And while they have this conversation, the DEA come and raid the house where they're at. And so Barry gets caught and he goes to a Colombian prison where Schaefer comes and he's there, obviously there to bail him out, but also like gives him a hard time, being like, you're not part of the CIA, you're a drug smuggler. Like, this is kind of what you get. Also, your wife's going to be like, now the police are aware of it, they're going to go and raid your family home and take your wife in for questioning, just FYI.
Because she's been none the wiser this whole time, supposedly. Like, while he's been working for the CIA and drug smuggling, his partner back at home and with his young kids still thinks that he's just running a legitimate airline business, or like a passenger plane business or whatever. Yeah.
Because I guess if you don't, in the 80s, you know, women weren't meant to know that sort of thing as well. So who knows what she was thinking. So, but he does get released. And they also have another little thing where they talk about the Nicaragua. Okay. They having a revolution. So the people who are in charge now are communists. And Reagan's like, we got to get them out. And the freedom fighters, known as the Contras, they want them to succeed. So they basically want to start arming them and getting them to overthrow the current people in charge so that the communists aren't in there anymore. No thought. Like, these Contras aren't, these guys don't like them. So we'll just let them try and take over without any care about whether or not they're actually better or not.
I'm going to be honest with you. When I was watching this movie, I was watching it last night, like chin to my chest with my like iPad on my stomach. I'm watching it. I paid $5 to rent this movie on Apple TV.
Yeah, why is it not fucking streaming anywhere?
I know. Well, I mean, I feel like nobody's heard of this movie because it's not on any streaming services. They probably buried it because of the trivia we'll talk about later. I swear to God, like, as they were talking about this entire portion of the movie, I was just like, I haven't actually listened to the words that are being said now.
That's why I'm here. So, yeah. Because I sat down, I like kept rewinding. I had to put the subtitles on. I'm like, what the fuck's happening here? So
Dom Hall will just like keep turning up and being like, oh yeah, we're not doing drug dealing anymore. We're doing gun dealing. Oh, we're not doing gun dealing anymore. We're taking people up to America now. Like, it's he's been upping the game the entire time. But the whole time I was watching, I was just like, wah, 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 wah. I'm like, I'm sure this won't be important later. That's fine.
Like, this is the thing, we could get so in depth with this. And okay, if you weren't like following it, that's fine. Because I've watched this movie enough.
I appreciate you.
times where I have a little bit more of an idea and I've done a little bit of reading, but I'm not going to get into the nitty gritty. Basically, Reagan wants the fucking communists out. He wants these other guys who, you know, don't have any structure or anything, but they want them to be in because they're not communists, basically. Mm-hmm. And now Barry is taking guns. So he's taking guns to Nicaragua. Fucking can't pronounce that name. I was like writing it out. I'm like, oh no.
I think it sounded fine. Nicaragua.
Fuck. He also has to keep doing the cocaine thing because when he's every time he talks to the cartel guys, they're like, you need to do this on Friday. And he's like,
they're like what? Holding up a gun to the phone. Like, listen, buddy.
And by this point, it was pretty well known that so the cartel, especially Pablo Escobar, loved car bombs. Like, mm-hmm. there's anyone who pissed him off a little bit, cut him off in traffic, fucking car bomb. Like, they would just car bomb. So that would have been in Barry's mind. Like, they didn't talk about this part of the movie, but being aware of that, that he would have known, like, if I have to keep them happy because they were like, it's riskier dealing with these guys than it is the CIA. The
there's
CIA
a threat of death constantly ever present.
At least the CIA would just, like, shoot him and be done, whereas there's a risk of him killing other people because the fucking car explodes at any possible time.
Totally.
So.
But that said, like, this movie, I feel like it's funny how there is this sort of, like, omnipresent threat of death if he doesn't kind of do the bidding of his captors. Mm. But the movie is really toothless, I feel, in that there's really no violence except for the car bombing later in the film. Like, there's no drug use. There's very little drinking. Like, nobody smokes in this movie. But, like, it feels like for a movie that is so, like, trying to be so bold and, like, hey, man, we're not, you know, we're cutting the shit and telling you the real story about what happened, man. Like, they're also like, oh, but we're not going to show any drugs or, like, you know, oh, we can't have anyone smoking or, like.
But they're fucking, they're random fuck, but even the fucking.
But even the,
like,
sex scenes are, like, pretty, completely toothless. Like, everyone's fully clothed.
Yeah.
Fully clothed sex. Like, it feels like, dare I say it, a Scientology approach to a kind of, like, wacky gonzo journalism movie where they're like, this movie has been cut down so much that there's no characters except for Tom Cruise. They've, like, rung the censor bell every time someone's like, maybe Tom Cruise should do some drugs in this scene, and they're like, absolutely not. Tom Cruise does not do drugs in movies. It's not allowed.
Like, I wonder, my two thoughts of that is that either Barry was kind of blissfully unaware of all that, like, all that stuff, but he kind of, like, he must have known, everyone knew at the time what Pablo Escobar was doing, but they never go into, like, how evil they were, and they don't talk about, like, how the CIA were, like, manipulating politics in other countries for their own nefarious reasons. Like, everything's kind of just like, this is just how it goes. Yeah. And so either it's, that's what they think Barry would have been experiencing it like, or they're just giving it, like, that American sheen that, which totally. Doug Liman's not the kind of director, maybe he is, I haven't watched a lot of his films, where he does that, like.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Doug Liman's kind of hit and miss with his movies, but, like, it almost feels like this, like, because they never kind of go into Barry's thought process in any of this. It's like, this movie is a series of things happening to Barry versus stuff that he's doing. You know what I mean? Like, there's no decision process ever. It's just like, it's taken out of his hands.
There's a deleted scene. So some of the deleted scenes probably would have helped with this a bit, but obviously the movie was going to get too long. But there's a bit. So when he's doing business, he doesn't use his phone line at home. He uses public telephones and a beeper. They have a scene where they're trying to tap the lines. So he keeps, as soon as he's watching the guys in the phone company running up the poles to try and tap it, and then he changes lines. So they're running down, like, they're doing that. And then it got to a point where it was so complicated. It was going through so many phones. He actually bribed someone, like a private contractor, to put in extra phone lines into these things. And so, like, that's how he was able to get away with it, because they couldn't tap him because they couldn't keep up with him. He was much cleverer than them. So, like, they actually showed that was a bit of the process of how he was getting away with it, you know, because the CIA isn't telling anything to the FBI or to local law enforcement or anything. Yeah. So they're trying to get this guy for doing this other stuff. The CIA aren't willing to protect him. They're just going to let him do what he wants to do, though. Yeah. And so, that was a really fun little, like, this is how he got around that. Yeah.
I love that.
But so it was, I think there was a little bit like, they cut out things that probably would have explained a bit more instead of just like kind of like blind dumb luck. They were just like, oh, I fell into this money-making venture and I fell into this.
Totally.
Thing.
Yeah. I tripped over and then a bag of mullet money just fell into my open arms. I was like, how did this happen?
Whoops. Schaefer busts him out of jail, like pays his bond or whatever. gets him out, says, okay, but we can't do anything. We're not local law enforcement. You need to sort out yourself with your wife and getting raided by the local sheriff or police, whatever. And he's like, well, what the fuck do I do? Say, we'll get out of Louisiana. Oh, actually, we have a house in Mena, Arkansas that you could go to. So it was all, it's all orchestrated, I guess, because basically they want him to move to Mena, Arkansas, because there is a little airport there. Like a little single runway with a little one little hangar, but they want him to take that so they can actually ramp up what he's been doing, and which he does. And in any upset he probably has about the whole moving thing, and like his wife's obviously appalled, like moving to this shitbox house in the middle of nowhere, and you know, just having to uphold the whole life. Because like our kid's having her dance recital tomorrow, he's like, we've got to move right now.
Yeah, like that's you know, classic stressful scene where he like comes home all beat up at like 4 a.m.
Oh, I'm missing a tooth.
Pack your bag right now, we're leaving the house immediately. And like, you know, the like the wife character or girlfriend character is just like, oh yeah, sure, like all right, let's do it. Like smash cut to them like living in Arkansas. Like the CIA is just like, we're gonna do witness protection, but just without the protection. Yeah. So we're just gonna get you to move to Arkansas.
Well, I guess that was the thing. They could just be like, well, if you in a different area, if you're in state, like you're fine. Like
again,
but doesn't help that the FBI were already onto him, and the FBI have jurisdiction across the country. Yeah. But anyway,
if you just close a door and they're on the other side of the door, if they can no longer see you.
You should be
That's
good.
What it was being a criminal in the 70s in America.
Oh, my Lord. One of the things he was doing was, taking guns to the Contras. They actually weren't that interested. They actually just wanted money. So, like, they bash him up and steal his shoes and his glasses when he first gets there. When he tells Schaefer's like, So when he goes back, he goes with a baseball bat, but he also brings him booze and porn to, like, here's some presents, now here's some guns. And they're not interested at all. So he works up this extra deal where he's like, well, they're not really interested in the guns, but the Medellin... the cartel.
Love
very interested
guns.
In guns. So they work out, so he takes the guns to Colombia, gets drugs, drops some of the drugs off to the Contras, who then take it by boat up, smuggle some of it, then he smuggles the rest up. Like, it's all very complicated, but basically almost none of the guns are going to the Contras at all. It's going to the worst possible people. But Barry's kind of like, well, no, Shaver's not listening to him. He's like, just get the guns to the Contras, it's fine. So he's like, okay, well, I'll work out my own shit to do.
He's like, and I don't have KPIs, bitch.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and then if you go to Schaefer, like getting in trouble, like why are there so many guns going to the Medellin? And he's like, I'll make a call. He's like, Barry, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm just doing what you told me to do. Like, there's no accountability or anything like that. It's, fucking wild. He ends up hiring 4 men to keep up with the workload, who are all pilots as well. So they're all shooting off and doing. And also, when he gets all the guns and everything to send to the Contras, Schaefer gives him this map and saying, these are all the things you need to avoid. Like, these are where they can take you in radar. This is where this thing, the jurisdiction. So he actually has a specific map that he just flies through. So yeah, that's why they can get away with it. It's just like,
they just keep upping the ante and upping the danger. Like, they kind of keep putting Barry, like the CIA keep putting Barry in these dangerous positions where he gets caught. So the CIA have more on him so they can keep, you know, extorting him to do more and more dangerous missions that, you know, are putting him at more risk. He's not getting much money from them. So he has to keep doing these kinds of other sort of like underbelly jobs in order to maintain his now quite extravagant lifestyle in Arkansas. One thing that I like about this particular part of the movie is how, like, this is the first time you get to see Domhnall Gleeson character Schaefer, like, at the CIA.
Yeah.
And so you get to see, like, how, because at the beginning of the movie, it isn't entirely clear whether the CIA actually know that Barry exists.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, fuck, is this Schaefer guy just some, like, rogue agent just getting Barry to kind of doing his bidding? But then as the movie kind of trickles on, you get to see that it's actually a lot more boring than that, where they're like, oh yeah, like, how's your guy in Arkansas going? And he's like, fine.
Yeah.
You know, and like, that's as much as the CIA kind of like knows or cares about it at that point. And it's like this much more kind of like trivial bureaucratic kind of like, you know, passing conversation where you're like, oh man, like, this guy's like risking it all. His life is in tatters. Like, you know, he's kind of making these big movers and shakers and, you know, across continents. And then further up the line, they're just like, oh yeah, so like that guy that takes takes photos, like, good, bad, no, yeah like, it's good. All good.
yeah, not bad. And yeah. Then just, that's it. Yeah.
Kind of evil in its mundanity.
Yeah. You know? It's like, yeah, what you imagine hell to actually be like? Like, so you got that shit, bad shit happening? Yeah, uh-huh. Just tick it off the list, yeah.
Oh, yeah, like, just absolutely, like, you know, like, not a bead of sweat or a raised eyebrow in the room, you know?
Following to that, we talk about how Schaefer is saying, well, we don't know what's going on with the Contras. Mm-hmm. They're not overthrowing the government like we thought they would, so we're going to bring some up to train them the American way and then send them back. Problem is, most of these people who are from, like, a fairly poor, you know, Central American country are like, oh, yeah, I'll come to America. Bye. And just later out of there. Just immediately. So, yeah, they talk about later where, like, half of them don't ever make it back. Like, they just get to America and just bolt. Like, they show them. Like, they get there, they land and go, nice. And just run off.
A lot of really good visual gags in this movie. Just a lot of kind of smash cuts to that, like, those little scenes where it's like they land the plane and then, like, five people just, like run. Yeah. Like, immediately out of the plane into the bushes.
And what does Barry care? Like, he's like, fuck. Yeah, I did what you want. Like, you can deal with the fucking nitty gritty of that.
No KPIs, no checks and balances, as far as the eye can see.
So he has to bring so many in because they all keep running off. Talk about fucking stressful. Like, is that money worth it? Maybe. Well, we see the money's worth it because they actually show them getting the house extension built. So this tiny little, like, three-bedroom house in the middle of nowhere is getting, like, renoed the fuck out of it. Like, they've got big TVs and the house goes from, like, looking a normal house to this fucking mansion. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they didn't just knock it down and start again, but they built this big pink mansion kind of thing.
Yeah. Barbie mansion. It looks beautiful. I love it.
The big pool and everything. So by now it's the summer of 82. He gets, you know, the shell companies to launder money. So he's like, shows people they're hiring. She's like, I can't wait to learn about sign making. And he's like, yeah, me too.
Love sign making. Yeah. Done it my whole life. Know so much about it. So much knowledge.
So yeah, just has a few of those to launder money, which I think to me sounds like the fun part of crime. Like, when, have you watched Breaking Bad?
Yes.
So when they have the car wash and, like, they have to use that to, like, that to me is, that's a bit, if I was in crime, I'm like, I'll just be the money launderer. I'm just going through and going, oh, yes, you're getting your car wash and, like, putting that through. That seems like the safer part of the crime.
Again, I feel like that part of the movie, again, it felt like there was so much left on the cutting room floor of, like,
because they
introduced the problem where they're like, we simply have too much money and we can't do anything with it. We're hiding it in the horse stable. We're burying it in the backyard. Like, it's falling out of our pockets. We just don't know what to do with it. And then, like, they kind of smash cut to him going into a bank and they're like, oh, you know, welcome to the bank, Mr. Rich Guy, like, the only rich man in this entire like tiny little town in Arkansas. We've actually opened up a whole new vault just for you to put your money in. But at no point does it kind of give any explanation or exposition about, like, how he's getting away with it.
And there's a weird bit too, which I was trying to work out and it didn't kind of click for me till later. There is one of the few black characters in this whole movie where he is kind of, like, looking into it, and I work out he's the FBI. And he's like, why is all this stuff, like, happening in me, this tiny town in Arkansas? Like, and he goes and sort of looks at it and they kind of don't touch it again until much later.
But thread that just gets cut off before it even begins.
Yeah.
And it's so confusing why it's even there. Yeah, it totally sets up this thing of, like, oh, the money stuff will be his downfall, and that's how they find out. When it's like,
actually, no,
this is completely different. We just did this for funsies. Like, we just filmed this bit just cause, you know.
He actually goes through how much. I actually wrote down how much money he had at that point, and I was like, I would like to have lots of money so I can buy all the obnoxious things that you can see in this room, more and more of them. But this is,
hell yeah,
fuck me. Like, he said, I have 10, 12, 15 million in these three different banks in MENA. He had 40 million in Miami, 20 in Panama, 7 in lawn bags, 8 Samsonites, 4 buried in the woods. This is all millions of dollars. And 90 pounds of gold. Like, that's
amazing.
Like, that's too much money. And, like, Lucy's like, one of the kids dug up on your bags of money and there's money flying. He's like, oh, I'll deal with it in the morning.
And,
like,
and all of that, you know, like, if you break your leg, that's what it costs in America, you know, to get, like, a split. That's what it takes.
One of the special features on the DVD where they actually talk about the real Barry Seal, and it's just his older son talking about what he knew about his dad and everything. And they say, like, when everyone at his funeral was like, the kindest man, if I, you know, he found out your business wasn't doing well, he'd just give you $50,000 and go, I don't want you to pay me back, or, you know, but put my kids through to college. Like, you do these good things. And I'm like, that is really nice. But also, you're so, like, he has to do something with the money. Like, fucking...
There was a throwaway line about that in the movie where Landry, cop character...
Mm.
Did you ever watch Friday Night Lights?
No. It's, I've been meaning to, yeah.
Yeah, like Meth Damon, you know,
yeah,
from Breaking Bad, like that guy. He pops up. And again, another plot thread that doesn't get followed through with, where he's kind of set up as like, oh, well, maybe he'll catch Tom Cruise's character. But like, again, it just doesn't kind of quite happen. But like, yeah, he does have that throwaway line where he's like, hey, he's really good for the community. Like he does really help people out. Because he's
obviously been bribing him with like season passes to the local football games.
Yeah.
And he's a bottle of expensive alcohol. And his partner who works with him in the sheriff's office is kind of like, And he's just like, oh yeah, but he's doing so much good for the, and also I am but a sheriff, lowly sheriff. Yeah, there's nothing he could fucking do at all. But
fun fact, Jesse Plemons is what I look like when I'm hungover.
I love him so much. I love how, yeah, we're all like, he's like the poor man's Matt Damon. And now I'm like, fuck Matt Damon. Jesse Plemons all the way.
Jesse Plemons like sucked out all of Matt Damon's handsome like over the last 10 years. He looks personality. Great.
Oh, have you heard what back on Matt Damon was doing lately?
Oh,
how his child had to tell him not to gay slur.
Also, have you seen the trailer for that horrible, shitty movie that he's going to be in, like the medieval jousting movie?
No. Oh, God.
Mate, it's like Matt Damon is in his flop era, like so hardcore. I will say,
because it was him in the Great Wall movie, right?
Yes.
That movie fucking rules. Like you think.
I've never seen it.
So it's one of those ones, a bit like Last Samurai, where you're like, this just seems like a white savior kind of, you know, an American Hollywood movie trying to whitewash another country. No. So this is a Chinese movie that they just got Matt Damon in as, so that would appeal to American audiences as well.
Yeah.
And also Pedro Pascal is in there, which means immediately I'm going to watch it. It's a Chinese movie and it's the coolest stuff. Like it's very kind of like fantasy. A
fantasy movie, yeah,
because
right?
The, some of the people who defend the Great Wall from the Mongols are like these women on these poles that go down and like chop heads off. And like, it's really.
I think I've seen that.
And I'm like, kind of like fuck Mad yes. Max, yeah.
Kind of, like Fury Road.
Yeah, it was so cool. So yeah, that's the last thing I've seen Matt Damon in. I was like, oh, okay, I don't hate this.
And that was that also 2007?
Probably.
I feel like that was a lost movie of like that era.
Yeah, because
we
were all like, this is ridiculous. Why is Matt Damon in this? And I'm like, no, this is a China going, oh, we're going to appeal to white people by putting a token white person in.
Yeah, and we're going to make him look like a fucking idiot as well.
Yeah.
We're going to make him look like a fool, a goddamn fool.
And don't worry, he can do that by himself by using gay slurs until his child has to write an essay to explain why that's wrong.
Why would you tell people that story?
Like, look at this quirky story. Everyone's like, what the fuck?
Dude, like you can tell so much that like this is what happens when celebrities talk without their agents kind of like pre-approving everything. Because you can so tell he was like, man, this was a really good learning moment for me. And just kind of like really hoping.
Everyone's like, looking at their watches like, it's 2021, my dude.
He's trying to like frame it as like this, you know, kind of like heartwarming story when everyone's like, wait, what the fuck? Are you saying that you've been saying this word to your kids this whole time? Why would you tell anyone that story? Jesus Christ.
Oh.
You're a fucking idiot. But Ben Affleck wouldn't say that.
No, Ben Affleck day went out in a shirt that said love is like a gay pride shirt. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, I don't say this. Look at me. And everyone's like, we like you. Yeah, we still like you.
Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, have we noticed, cannot be successful simultaneously. The coin is flipped.
Yeah.
Ben Affleck and J-Lo back together. Ben Affleck, you know, looking good. Looks like he's probably stopped drinking a little bit. Matt Damon saying the F slur on the internet in a shitty, horrible movie that no one likes, you know, kind of like Ben Affleck as well.
Yeah, but the two of them are a pie and you can't, there's like either you've got more of the pie or less of the pie. Like there's no.
Yeah.
And every now and then one of you sneaks some more pie and the other one has to just be like, oh, okay.
They actually signed a deal with the devil when they started writing when they made that movie. What was it? Good Will Hunting?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like these dumbasses have never written a word in their life. They signed a deal with the devil and the...
That was the condition.
Yeah, like the monkey's paw kind of like, you know, finger closing is that, oh, like, you know, only one of you can be successful at the same time and you're...
Oh, we can trade. And then when it happens, they're like, oh, fuck, this sucks.
God, incredible.
Okay, so
Jesse Plemons.
What a good lad. Fucking love him. Barry takes Lucy to a party with it. So Lucy obviously understands what's going on here. And I guess it seems like they grew up kind of war. Because at one point she's like, if you're going to jail, like I'll just take these kids back.
Back to KFC, baby.
Back to KFC. And I went, like, obviously, like, what's she going to do? And be like, stop doing this. And he's like, well, I can't. And she's like, well, what am I going to do? Leave you with no money? Like, but also, it'd be fucking great. Like, the excess of the 80s, like, it'd be like, hell yeah, I get to be like the people in Dallas and I get to live like this. Like, it'd be hard to say no when you're getting away with it for so long. So
absolutely. I feel like she made the decision when he woke her up in the middle of the night and was like, we're moving to Arkansas, don't ask any questions. And the kind of implicit agreement was sort of, you know, came along with that, where by moving to Arkansas, we've decided that we're cool with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just going to see where this crazy roller coaster takes us, baby. On their way home, he flies them home and they have all the presents in the back of the car. I don't know what that's for. But anyway, they fuck while they're flying. And oh God, I'm like,
so painful.
I fucking cringe. I'm cringing
myself into another dimension just thinking about it.
So the reason why that happened, they decided to do that, is because apparently, two fucking dads coming up with a dumb idea. Mm-hmm. So Tom Cruise and Doug Liman were in a plane, and when they were flying, they must have gone like that feeling when you go really fast over a hill and you kind of feel like you're floating. That must happen in the plane. And they flew and they bumped into each other and they're like, let's make this a sexy thing in the movie. I'm like, or don't.
I can see this conversation playing out in my head. Like,
oh, imagine if we went our two co-workers and it was a boy and a girl and they were bumping uglies.
Oh, like, no. Like doing lines on their like private jet. Just go, like, oh, you know, it'd be fucking sick. Easy float when there was turbulence. You were actually like nutting. It would be fucking awesome, actually. Oh, yeah, no, that's great. We're keeping it in. Just like putting like a big green tick like on their like notes, like a script written on a napkin, just like fucking knobheads. It's so bad.
Fucking dweebs. That happens and I'm like, oh, this is the part where I tap out. No, I keep going. So yeah, I think based on time, we might have to leave it there. We'll leave it on the excellent thought of, as they gravity affects them, she falls back on Tom Cruise's dick and they all make faces and I vomit everywhere. Yeah. And I'll leave you with that. Nice, beautiful mental image. And there's so much more to happen. Oh my God. I didn't know we'd have so much to say about this movie.
Yeah. Oh yeah, this is the first 10 minutes. It's a movie. I'm kidding. Jesse Plemons has so much more to give in this.
Yeah, definitely isn't like fucking forgotten for most of this movie or anything. Okay, we'll leave it there and we'll continue with a part two of the movie. Before we go, where can we find you online, Phoebe?
You can find me on phoebeparadise.com and my shop. Like, you can buy some wares through my web store there, or find me on Instagram @@PhoebeParadise. If you know the person who owns @PhoebeParadise, it is a dead account. Please help me report them. It would be really nice to get rid of that period point.
Yeah, I want to rename my thing to Creepy Cara, and someone has Creepy Cara. I'm like, get out of here. I want it.
Sons of bitches. Yeah, come on.
But yeah, please go check out Phoebe Sapp. She's an amazing artist and does the coolest stuff ever. And yeah, you should all go treat your eyes to have a look at it. As for me, it's Tom Cruise Reviews on Instagram, Tom Cruise Review on Twitter, no S on the end, TomCruiseReviews.com. If you want to rate and review me on iTunes or wherever you listen to the podcast,
do it.
That would be very much appreciated. My dogs have decided they've had enough, so we're going to leave it there and we'll catch you next week.
Yeah.